So let me over to Frank Bredijk, Crisis Manager of DIVD, and he will further introduce himself.
Yeah. Thank you all for being here. And to give you a little bit of a glimpse of what is crisis management about. Imagine yourself having worked the morning from home, being in your car, driving towards the office, and you get a call, and the call is, Frank, I have a question. Why does your clicker not work? No, that wasn't the question. The question was, what is our procedure if a volunteer is arrested? So I'll leave that to you. I'll come back to you when I show this slide again. But as promised, I'll introduce myself a little bit. My name is Frank Bredijk. I'm with DIVD from the start. I think now besides the founders, I got challenge coin number 4 for being there as the first volunteer. Leonard as being the second volunteer. And after that, I don't have the score. As a crisis manager, I come into action in two cases. One where we have a huge case that is going to gather media attention, a lot of questions. Kaseya was one of those, but I talked about that last year, I guess. And this case that I'm talking about now, when there's actually a threat to the Dutch Institute of Vulnerability Disclosure. My day job is a CISO for SchubertPhillis. And if you want me to waste your time, ask me about my converted barn house, my kids, balloon folding, fire breeding, the 1960s Stellex that we have in the hacker room, beekeeping, or other stuff. But that's not what this talk is about. So at DIVD, we do stuff that is, to the letter of the law, illegal. It could be considered computer crime, but there's one word in the letter of the law, and that's in Dutch, wederrechtelijk. Without right, and that can be used for research for good, for ethical hacking. And in order to make sure that everybody understands what that entails, we've created a code of conduct that applies to everybody at DIVD, and it's basically our laws or our bylaws or whatever you want to call them. And it's the ethical basis of what we do. We work with volunteers and aim to make the digital world safer by searching for vulnerabilities and trying to report those vulnerabilities to those that are in a position to fix them. And we need everything we need to do. There's three criteria that we need to meet. One is societal need. One is we have to stick to the principle of proportionality, meaning that the cure can't be worse than the ailment. And the other one is subsidiary. If we have to choose between a small hammer, a large hammer, and a nuke, we always have to choose the smallest means that still works to prove what we want to do. And the other thing is we analyze online threats, not threat actors. We don't care about the criminal ecosystem that's doing this. We care about what they are doing, the actual vulnerabilities. And we don't serve the needs of government or law enforcement. We're not an extension of the police. These code of conduct is really important for what we do. So another thing I want to get off my chest before we dive really in is that this isn't a talk about Pepijn van der Esch. If you want to know what happened there, there's enough written out there. He himself gave interviews. There's other people who've been through this. This is about what we as DIVD have experienced as this happened and what we learned from it. Because, well, experience is equal to time worked and material wasted, mistakes made. And if we can tell you what mistakes we made, it means you don't have to make them as well. And yes, of course, we will be discussing the case because it happened in there, but it's not about the case. It's not about why he did it. Or to discuss, is his conviction enough? It's about the do's and the don'ts, and sometimes about the dilemmas that we faced when we were discussing this. So back to the question, who here has a procedure for when a volunteer, employee, colleague gets arrested? Who would know what to do? If you raised your hand, you're either a crisis management or you did a lot of crisis management trainings. I can tell you what we did. Having a volunteer arrested means that there's a third party, an unauthorized third party. That is the police, but nevertheless, it's an unauthorized third party that potentially has access to your infrastructure. Because typically when they arrest somebody, they're gonna tend to take their devices with them. They tend to seize everything. And thanks to all the long-lived cookies out there, session keys, etc., if somebody finally gets into your laptop, they can probably pretend to be you and get to all the information that the one who was arrested had. So first action was to get this third party out of our network, or at least make sure they didn't happen. Containment. So we locked all the accounts, and then we did a risk analysis. What access did this person have? What damage could we sustain from this arrest? And based on that, we decided, okay, that means we have to preserve evidence. Now at DIVD, we scan from a scanning infrastructure that's consisted of VMs. So we made immediately made a snapshot of the VM that they was working about and kept that in a safe place. And I guess there's somebody in the room who still remembers that call, but it was like, hey, I don't want to tell you why, but I need a snapshot that I'm sure that is. And by the way, can you make a hash of that snapshot and save it somewhere else? Can you mail it to me? I think was the question, or Slack it, I don't know. We called in our crisis management team. We have a team for that. It's a couple of people. At this point, it was a bit ad hoc still. And the other thing we did was inform our board. Like, listen, this is what happened. A volunteer got arrested. We're on it. Please stand by. What you shouldn't do is disable the account. That's very visible in the organization. All of a sudden, somebody drops from the radar. You get an unknown user in Slack. The other thing the police asks you to do if you speak to them, which we didn't do in this case, but I have done in previous cases, is they ask you not to remotely wipe the laptop. Well, in this case, there was no problem there because the laptop wasn't under remote management. But if you do, it might be seen as participating in the destruction of evidence if you give the laptop a remote wipe command. And make also very sure that you're not destroying any other evidence, because at this point in time, you don't know if you're going to be part of this investigation, and you don't want to come in a position where you have to explain, this is why we destroyed your evidence, we're so sorry. And then the most important one of them all, and I forgot the prop, but you have one card that says it all in your badge pocket, that's don't panic. Panic is always bad. Panic gives you bad advice. Realize that at that point in time, we were under the fog of crisis. Something has happened, you don't know all the facts, it's a very confusing situation, because this could be related to, I don't know, maybe he was growing plants on his attic. Maybe he was speeding too much, and I don't know. Likely, given what we do as an organization, given what his work was, this could be computer crime related, but we just don't know. And that's where it's really good to have your connections. And through those connections, yeah. So again, the do's and the don'ts: use your network and your connections. Also, be mindful of your connections. Don't betray their trust. So please don't ask me who they were. And based on the connections, based on calls we did around, we knew pretty quickly, but it took about a day, I guess, before we know, okay, it's definitely computer crime related. So here we are, White Hat Collective, and we got somebody arrested for computer crime. Okay, could be, what does it mean? I don't know. It's computer crime. Could be an investigation that the police thought was a hacking attempt. We don't know. And then we got into a dilemma. Who do you tell what? And there's a good principle in law that is that you are innocent until proven guilty. Also, there's an ongoing investigation. So they arrested somebody. I don't know who they want to know that fact. Maybe they're trying to do it quietly. There was nothing in the press, because you keep monitoring that. And by the way, in the same time, a large ransomware gang got dismantled. So maybe it was part of that. Again, the fog of crisis. What you definitely shouldn't do is condemn people in the court of public opinion. If you at this point say, and this is, I mean, a lot of people here are in cybercrime. There's a high quality of ethics in this community in general. And if I were to say, hey, listen, Kooks, sorry, I'm going to use you as a sledgehammer, was arrested for computer crime. We don't know if he's guilty. You're never going to get rid of that stigma. And by the way, just for the avoidance of doubt, he wasn't. I'm just making this up. But he's a big boy and he can handle it. And don't make this kind of decisions on your own. There's a reason you have a crisis management team. These are the things that are really good to reflect on. And maybe trust somebody in, say, an ethics committee and have a chat with them and say, listen, I've got this dilemma, and do it in really general terms. And come to a better conclusion. So, nothing happened for a while. So this all happened late January. So you said half a year, it's actually already been a year. Actually, at Hacker Hotel last year, this was going on. Turns out we have friends at the police. And it was during a DEF CON Holland meetup that one of their officers approached me. He said, listen, we have that person in custody. We know we'll get and give you some information. We'll talk tomorrow. And we got a heads up verbally. And yes, we've got a suspect. He's a DIVD volunteer. And he's currently in restricted custody. In Dutch, onder beperking. And that means that you're in a police cell and basically the only person you're allowed to talk to is your lawyer. Nobody else is actually allowed to talk to you, other than things like, what do you want from me? Here's your meal and that sort of stuff. But you are not allowed to discuss anything with anybody outside law enforcement. We suspect that this beperking, this restricted custody will stop on the 22nd of March. And at that point, we will issue a press release, and it may not be pleasant for you. I don't think that's a quote unquote, but it was sort of what they were saying. And we've already talked to two major news outlets, and they may, in the meantime, they're already fishing really hard. They might find out that he belongs to you and they may come to you with questions, so be prepared. And we are not giving out his identity, but we will give his age and his current hometown once the press release goes out. So we had a CMT meeting again, and then you have this information. And then a very weird time starts. Waiting. You have to go on with the normal change of things, but one of your volunteers is missing. Why is he missing? Can't say. Don't want to feed speculation, but you can't say. You've been given information confidentially. So all you get to do is wait. Have regular meetings with each other, keep each other posted, but posted about, yeah, watching corn grow, sand drop, no new information. Until, not the 22nd, but the 23rd, 5 o'clock-ish, this publication comes out, and they talk about the biggest data theft ever in the Netherlands. 3 arrests, and in this data set, there's something from everybody in the Netherlands. at least something. By the way, they had a proper job in the during the day, but in the meantime, they were stealing personal data and extorting businesses. Yeah, quite a shock. To understate it a little bit. But it also means it's out in the news. So what we did is within DIVD, we issued an internal statement where we said, you know, we know this is a former DIVD volunteer. We made that first known to our MT and later to the broader organization when there was more speculation. We activated our crisis management team. We did an internal investigation, which we could also, which we had started prior. So there were a few people who were in the know. As far as we know, we were and have not been until this moment part of the police investigation. Reminded everybody that this is a suspect. And he has his right of his privacy. So try to keep the speculation in a minimum because it doesn't achieve anything. We asked everybody not to seek media attention. We're ready for when this link comes out. And what we did was we opened the Slack channel, what we call an AMA channel, an Ask Me Anything channel, where people could come together and ask questions about this. We didn't call the entire troops together yet. It was late, end of day. So what are dues? Whenever this happens, communicate. We knew for sure, but the rumor mill started working and there were people who were already linked him and knew from other sources. Make sure that there's room for people to discuss, either physically or virtually. We're mostly a virtual organization, so we didn't choose the physical room. But in a regular company, you might call people together in a setting like this, tell your story, and then open up the floor for questions. What we learned is what you shouldn't assume is that you can keep something this big a secret. We were trying to be, we thought it wasn't our place to communicate who it was. People really quickly caught on. Yeah, and the dilemma. There was an arrest. Somebody was arrested for things that were pretty serious. I think they found tens of thousands of euros in a shoebox in his house, according to the media. Found even a multiple of that in bitcoins, seized money. It really is a dilemma. Should I still, but innocent until proven guilty and stick with it? And then there was more media attention. The people at NOS put a article out there saying the arrested hacker was active at security organization DIVD, and about 30 minutes later, the title of the article became "Arrested Hacker Was Active for Government Subsidized Security Organization DIVD." They were quoting an anonymous source from within DIVD, and they were even quoting from the Slack message that I showed you earlier. Crap. I think that's my summary. Yeah, what did we do? There's no other thing than to start and go out and we're not going to deny it when people say it. If we're going to be asked outright, is this the case? Yeah, well, there's no denying it. So put out a press release. The other thing we did was, Chris, you need to manage all our external stakeholders. Go and talk to them. So, adieu, be honest, be open, no matter what. This is not nice. Share why you're doing what you did. So share to your own organization, listen, the reason we didn't came out was because we didn't want we didn't think it was our place to dox this person. And this community is so small that if I'm going to tell you, by the way, this is a volunteer that worked for DIVD and another security organization that I will not name, but he's 22 years old and he lives in Zandvoort, plenty of you don't consider that an OSINT challenge anymore. That's just 5 minutes. What we learned is that you shouldn't inform your stakeholders too late. And when they hear stuff from the press, that in their definition is too late. That's their definition of too late. The other thing we learned is not to assume that our internal communication stays internal. And that's true for any organization bigger than N people. And don't let the fact that you had a leak frustrate the hell out of you. And that's probably the hardest one on this board. But yeah, you can't deal, it's a fact, it happens. And your biggest dilemma, how big is N? And obviously we thought N was bigger than the amount of people that we were at that point in time. And we were proven wrong. We also thought it was time to give more attention to the team. A lot of people, lots of emotions, and you need to give room. You need to give room to the questions. You need to give room to the emotions. Because people feel betrayed or feel shocked that this happens in their organization that they think is safe, safe place, secure place. That, yeah. So we called up our first inloopspreekuur. Walk-in meetings where we said people like, listen, this is the time when we're going to open up the floor. We're not going to take minutes, but anything is okay. You can ask anything. This is time to discuss. And I was a little bit surprised at what happened in the first walk-in meeting. Because we got very, very little questions. Now, does this look familiar to anybody? This is a time where you can do a little bit of interaction. Shout out, what is it? Stages of grief. So these are the stages of grief. And there's a lot of, there has been serious psychological things in here. And it wasn't until later what I realized is that we were here because we heard this in January and we were told in February that there was going to be an article in March. And then when it happened in March, we could... Like, we've already been through the nigh anger, we've already bargained with probably nothing, we've had been a little bit depressed, but everybody else was still there. So everybody else was still like, no, this isn't happening. So what I take from there is walk-in meetings and AMA sessions and AMA channels are a good idea. Give it space. Also, if you put it in a separate Slack channel, if you make separate meetings from it, it means you can, well, you can never take it away from the normal operation. That would be very naive, but you can let the normal operation go. And then if people start arguing, it's like, listen, we've got a meeting for that. We got to channel it out, do it there. Here, we're going to just concentrate on what we're doing, what we're good at. Yeah, don't forget you had a hard head start. You knew this. As a crisis team a month ahead, they just heard it. And don't encourage speculation. Really, speculation doesn't help. And then we said we weren't part of the police investigation, but we did get an informal request. After all, it's like, hey, can we have the data that he was working on? And then the reason they wanted this data was to rule out his work for DIVD from his, what turned out to be criminal activities, but that's what we later learned. And that's a bit of a dilemma as well, because we work with sensitive data. We work with basically IP addresses that are vulnerable to an O-day. What we have is basically a very good attack map of the internet. Just on an informal request? Well, what we came up with, I discussed this with our privacy officer who's talking about cats in another room. And we said, listen, what are we going to do about it? He's like, well, really, if they want the data, let's make them ask for it. Because then at least we have a solid basis to explain what it is about. By the way, let's offer to help them write basically the subpoena. So that we know, okay, because before you know it, you get a subpoena, please turn over all research data of the IVD. And very little room to say no unless you want to start legal procedures that cost an awful lot of money and an awful lot of time. And we didn't want to do that. So we proposed this. In the end, it was, no, we're not going to make a formal request. So the biggest thing is do cooperate. Fighting with the police is not a very good way to keep them friendly. But don't bring yourself in a situation where you cannot explain that you handed over data. And then we did an internal investigation, but yeah. In the end, we decided to call in external investigations. So why did we decide to do that? Well, don't underestimate the power of an external investigation, because before you know it, you're like the guy in the green arrows. And I'm not sure if everybody can see that, but it's the toilet duck. Familiar to Dutchies, and otherwise, just Google it. The other thing you do if you get a freebie, and we generously got given this investigation, don't forget to thank the people who gave it to you. So this is a shout out to the people at Fox IT. Thanks for helping us out when we were in a difficult spot. We really appreciate it. After a while, there was more investigation, and it were the investigative journalists of Follow the Money. They talked to a lot of us, trying to get to a little bit more of a background. Where did he come from? Also a little bit background. What did it do to us? We talked to them, and when the article came out, the first words were, "Where's Pepin?" Damn it, we said we wouldn't say it. That was a surprise to us. We were sticking to innocent until proven guilty. What we had underestimated was the phenomenon of guilt by association. There were more people who were not at the beginning of their career working for DIVD who got the question, is this about you? No, it's not about me. And then it helps if you actually put out a name in the press. Dutch journalist code is very simple on this. Also, the NOS at that point already could have said if they found out the identity that it was Pepijn van der Es. They didn't, but at this point, yeah, they made a careful consideration. And I guess it goes to show that this crowd is even more privacy sensitive and minded than what is generally accepted in society. Little bit about Pepijn, and not by Edwin van Andel, although I didn't know how he ended up in my slide. He got 4 years in prison, of which one probational. He has to pay tens of thousands of euros in damages. And that's going to take quite a while after he's out of jail. He was convicted for hacking, computervredebreuk, extortion, afpersing en afdreiging, data fencing, het helen van niet openbare data, ransomware, overnemen en ontoegankelijk maken van gegevens, en financial crimes, gewoon te witwassen. That's a, regardless of your opinion, for Dutch law, this is quite a substantial sentence. And yeah, I think justice did its course, ran its course. And we learned a lot. And it's not until you go back and do your retrospective that you realize that. So when you get into a crisis situation and you're in a crisis team, some things are inevitable. And the first one is that you're going to make mistakes and you're going to make them quickly and a lot. Why? Because you have to make quick decisions based on incomplete data, and you're under pressure. The other thing is that no matter what you do, people will have an opinion about what you do. And they will be looking from the outside in based on other information that you have that they don't have and you can't tell them. Yeah, don't let them get to you. A good crisis management team is key. And as a crisis management team, you want to be a team as well. You want to support each other. You want to act fast, but think before you act. You want to put every team member in their own role. So normally, director is the one that makes the decisions. In crisis management team, we've made the decision that as crisis management, I take a lot of the decisions, final decisions, but we talk with the team. We put experts in the lead. I don't know about forensics investigation, but there's people at DIVD that know about forensics investigation. If they say they can't find anything, then they find anything. If Lucinda, who's not here, but at that point did communication, she says, I wouldn't put it out like that. Well, hey, she's got a job in communication, not me. And so each in our own role, besides the role we have in the normal organization. And diversity makes for better decisions. It really helps to have a diverse crisis team to get a lot of people and a lot of different opinions together. And remember that crisis management is not about finding the guilty person or assigning blame. All we are about is containment and recovery, up to a point. Or containment and restoration, I think, is even better and not recovery, now that I think about it. Other important lesson is, as they say in Dutch, wie schrijft, die blijft. He who writes will prevail. So keep a log of everything. Everything, well, okay, maybe not what you had for breakfast that day, but everything that might potentially be relevant. Even the fact that you had a meeting and there was nothing to discuss and you were done after 5 minutes, at least you had a meeting that day. Write it down. And it's easy to give this role attention if it's relatively busy. If it's very busy, it's really hard to keep up. And if it's quiet, it's also really hard to keep up because it's boring. But it is important. In your crisis management team, work with the OODA loop, or the BOP in Dutch. The OODA loop comes from fighter pilots who have to make decisions on the spot, are doing all sorts of twists and turns, gets disoriented. So the first thing they learn is, okay, you're in a situation, observe, what do I see? Well, the horizon's like this, there's a bogey there. There's one below me, there's one that I don't have a clue where he is right now. Orient, what does that mean? Okay, horizon's like that, so I'm turning right. I don't have to worry about him, I have to worry about him, the one below me and the one I don't see, I don't know, and then you decide and you act. Or in Dutch, beschrijf de situatie, oordeel, en dan beslissen, en dan doen. And that one isn't in the acronym. It really helps to structure your meetings with this, to realize where you're there, and that observe is really about the fact. And that's the other thing, facts, assumptions, and hearsay. It's really important to know if you get a bit of information, if it's a fact, if it's an assumption, if it's hearsay, or maybe even a lie, or a gossip. That doesn't mean you have to take them into consideration, because the fact that somebody's lying or the fact that somebody's gossiping is useful information and tells you something about what's going on in your organization. But you have to know what each is and what you're taking them for. Make sure your community is informed. Make sure there's room to talk. I think this is the most important point, and I guess that's why I'm repeating it a couple of times now. But give your people attention. Make sure there is room for emotion. Make sure there is room for the grief process. Another topic that's on the agenda, I think, in this conference in general, but is mental health. Boy, this stuff is tough. I know I don't enjoy it. Well, I enjoy it when a year later. I don't enjoy it at that moment because it's really tough. Your organization is going through a crisis. You are going through this crisis. If you care, it's easier to do crisis management for something you don't really care about because it's not personal, but it passionate as we are, it quickly becomes personal. You're also not master of your agenda, because you think, okay, that was the news, I quickly let's wrap it up, let's wrap the log up, this is going to blow over, and then something new happens. And guess what you're doing that day? Not the thing you plan to do. Make sure you have somebody to rant to. I know I used, in DIVD we have vertrouwenspersonen, trust counselors, I see one sitting over there. I know I called him up at some point, like, listen, I need to rant. And I need somebody to rant to who understands I don't need you to fix my problems, I just need to get this off my chest. Yeah, sometimes you just need to rant. Take care of yourself, take care of each other. In the team, sometimes you have to acknowledge, like, yeah, this is shit. Okay, what are we going to do about it? External communications. Writing a good press release is hard. If it looks like something that was written down very easily and very smoothly, it's because somebody spent a lot of painstaking hours and time and effort and rewriting it. But it also sometimes takes up too much time. We were late with the press release after NOS. I would have liked to push the button back then when it was already finished. But yeah, you need to know the facts before you can react. And a couple of things that I learned is, if you're communicating with this, try to stick to facts and figures. It's hard to argue with, it's one volunteer of the DIVD. Yes, he was 22 years old. No, he's no longer a volunteer, we suspended him. Opinions is much easier to argue with. And if you can't talk about the content because you don't know, or you don't want to, or you don't think it's the time, people want you to talk to something, talk about the process. So we don't know if he violated this, but we've started an internal investigation, we've captured the evidence, we've started an internal investigation. We're going to wait for the results from the internal investigation, and based on the internal investigation, we're going to make a decision. You've told nothing except the process that you're following through. And don't be afraid to get help. It's a bit easier for a commercial organization, but if you've not done this before, get a professional involved. It really, really is an art in itself. A hard lesson, and I can see Chris with his six fingers in front of his face. We were way too late informing our stakeholders. We should have done it before the press got there. And it was our ethics, it was our dilemma. We don't want them to know that it was a... We don't want to out him to our stakeholders, but in retrospect, we should have been there before that. And then my six fingers in front of my face... Yes, I should have involved the CISO. Oh, he walked out. And our data protection officer in this investigation and kept them better in the loop. And that's a bit of a trick when you're in a different role and you're in a normal role as CISO, then you don't tend to think of the other CISO, who's actually CISO of that organization. If you've never done a crisis exercise, if you don't have a run book, there's still time, hopefully. If you have to find this out all as it happens, it's not going to make it easier. Now, the thing with the playbook is, don't make it too generic. Yes, we will have crisis management meetings. You can put some sort of scenarios together, but don't make it too specific either. Because, yeah, we get if you make it too specific, every crisis is different. So then it won't fit your playbook anymore. And if you don't have many incidents, practice regularly. One of the mottos I like to bring when we're doing that is, hope for the best and plan for the worst. Or generally, it helps to have three scenarios ready. What's the best case scenario, what's the worst case scenario, and what's the most likely scenario? Most likely scenario usually is in the middle. And might change, but this helps to have three scenarios, but allow yourself the mental room to switch scenarios, and turns out that it's somewhere between your worst scenario and your likely scenario, or between your best scenario and your likely scenario. The other one is, know when to quit. There's a time to return to normal. There's a time to return to your operation. Say, listen, the crisis is behind it. We're now back in normal operation. Don't be afraid to quit. And with that, time for questions.
Well, thank you very much, Frank, for sharing our side of the story. We still have 5 minutes for questions or your own opinion on the matter. So please raise your hand and I'll come to you with the microphone. Anyone there?
I think we have to give them a little bit of time.
Yeah. Hello.
Yeah, I was wondering, the DFID is already working on the edge of the Dutch law. Did this incident change the DIVD and its work?
That's a very, very broad question. Trauma changes you. So yes.
So what sense do you mean? Legally or operations or the way we work together?
Yeah, maybe the operations. So the work you do. Maybe it's because I don't know the full story of this person, but I assume this person has data which he got from the DIVD, his work at the DIVD, and he misbehaved with this data.
Yeah, so that was a worst case scenario. Our best case scenario and likely scenario was he was doing DIVD research and the police mistook that for criminal conduct and arrested him from that. What actually happened was that this guy was a black hat by night and a white hat by day. So of the criminal activities that were found and the work that he did for DIVD, there was no cross-section.
Let me slightly correct you there. He used to be a black hat and he tried to watch it white working with us. So criminal activities weren't going on during our work.
Yeah. That's what he said. And
there was no proof of that. No.
I don't know what the story is, but what happened was the what we found so far, and also what I've heard, is that none of the cases that he was working on with the DIVD had any relation to the cases that he was convicted for. So it was literally, well, you could compare it to a pyromaniac working for the fire brigade, but he wasn't actually putting out any of his own fires. As an organization that likes to give people second chances or likes to give people a chance, likes to channel what people do, and yeah, does hacking, it was not strange that we got a hacker in our midst.
That's a risk we already thought about. Your question was, did it change the way we work? Yes, the onboarding process is much more tedious now. There's much more checks and balances in there. We already had a lot of checks and balances on the ongoing research, which are more enforced. So yeah, it did change our work to a certain extent. Yeah.
And I think as persons, we got more cautious in sharing and involving too many people on an investigation. So high profile investigations are already things that we only give people access to on a need to know basis. We're keeping those teams even smaller. And we're working on more technical separation to make sure that nobody can access each other's. The people who can access each other's investigations are even more limited.
Okay, so time's up for now. If you have more questions, we're here all weekend, so you can post them to, well, Frank, me, Astrid, or Victor around here. Do also follow us on some of the other sessions which are about our core process. I mean, I hope you don't think with this presentation, oh, DVDs about criminals. No. So especially on Sunday, we'll be having Axel Busenach on how we scan and notify on Fortinet. There will be Max, Ralf, and Lennart on a workshop on our core process, you know, scanning on vulnerabilities, notifying. There will be Jelle on open sources on the internet. So that's kind of the core process we do at DIVD. Also, the DIVD Academy is present to show how we teach young people how to hack in an ethical way. And you can join Frank and me at the fire breeding workshop tomorrow night.
Which or will or be balloon folding tomorrow afternoon.
Yeah, I won't be joining that.
But you won't be joining. I know more people who won't be joining.
Yes. Okay, thank you very much. This was the first big session of Hacker Hotel. See you soon.